I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story, Newsroom Edition, where Guardian Australia's editors discuss the news of the week. In the past decade, local newspapers around Australia have downsized, stopped printing, been absorbed by metropolitan newsrooms, or closed their doors altogether. But rural communities are at the coalface of the biggest issues facing the nation. The immediate and lasting impacts of global heating.
Hailstorms came, but then there were bushfires, and the region of northern New South Wales, just near the Queensland border, remains in drought.
The ongoing effects of the pandemic.
Just a couple of days ago, the Prime Minister warned prolonged border closures were a recipe for economic ruin. Because of the rules, many producers can't access their properties, cattle and crops.
And even a major disruption. Mice.
Just months ago, rural areas in much of eastern and southern Australia were infested with mice, and farmers are concerned that back-to-back plagues will have a serious impact on their crops.
But it often feels as if there's a divide between Australia's regions and major metropolitan areas.
And of course, I have a responsibility to regional people, not just farmers, people working abattoirs everywhere else.
Today, I'm talking to Editor-in-Chief Lenore Taylor and Rural and Regional Editor Gabrielle Chan about reporting on the regions. It's Friday, the 17th of September. Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Gabs.
Good morning, Gabby.
Morning, Gabs.
Two Gabses, too many Gabses.
So The Guardian launched a rural network this week. What does that mean, Lenore?
Well, it's a way we've come up with to try to get eyes and ears in rural and regional Australia. I guess it's been bothering me for a long time that we didn't really have reporters outside of urban centres, but the problem was where to put them and how to get proper local knowledge rather than a sort of fly-in, fly-out reporter from the city. So the idea was to set up a network of collaborating freelance journalists anchored by a really experienced rural and regional editor. And I am very, very happy to say that Gabrielle Chan, who's been with The Guardian from the beginning and who I've worked with for many decades, let's not say how many, has agreed to be that rural and regional editor.
And Gabby, you live on a farm, but can you tell us a bit about the work you've done recently on regional and rural issues in Australia?
Yeah, I've lived on the farm for 25 or so years, and while the early part of those years were really focused in the press gallery, I got more and more interested in this kind of life that I was marinating in and how those policy issues affected rural people. So the separation between the debates I was seeing in the press gallery and the debates I was seeing on my main street. And I guess the work that I got more interested in was how to use local stories to reflect into national issues and sometimes international issues like climate change. So the things that I learned were basically that if we have an information gap in a small town like ours, if we lose a rural newspaper, it creates a vacuum. So people make stuff up, people go on rumour mills, and there's no kind of source, trusted source. And I think that's what happens when there's a decline in newspapers. And I worked actually at the local newspaper here, which was a tiny little 8-page paper that wrapped around a bigger regional lift out, and it had a circulation of about 900 copies, and I was the only journalist editing myself, no sub-editors, cleaning the toilet, and it was a big responsibility. Like it's a major thing to direct coverage for a place that is relying on you, and I think that's why this project is so exciting.
And it's interesting, Gabby's right, that backdrop of journalism job losses, which accelerated during the pandemic around, well, everywhere, but particularly in regional centres and rural Australias. And there's also like lots of television and radio stations centralised their news production, so they weren't really local at all. That's the backdrop for this project. But Like, we're not going to be able to be everybody's local newspaper. We're not going to be able to go to every FATE or every local council. But what we're hoping to do is have eyes and ears, have an idea of what's going on, and with Gabby's judgment and contacts, be able to report on the biggest and most important issues, or the issues that are indicative of what's going on, of trends, of experiences.
So what are some of those issues, Gabby?
Well, there's endemic issues that in some senses we know about but have failed to address, like things like education, teacher recruitment, health services is obviously a massive one, particularly in the pandemic. Mm. And we're really seeing that sort of exposed now as COVID spreads into the regions. Telecommunications is my daily bane of my life, you know, just trying to get connectivity. And I know that's an issue in some city areas as well, but particularly hard in regional areas. I now carry two phones on two different carriers just to try and get coverage across a very patchy network. Climate change, massive issue that particularly the farming community is dealing with. And because of the way that political debate has gone, it's become a really kind of fractured issue. So that's a really interesting one to me. And then, you know, transition to energy, land usage issues, where we see these fights between farming and mining over, you know, who takes precedence. All of these issues are big things. And really, the world's problems, the big existential problems like climate change, soil loss, water shortages, zoonotic diseases, energy production, all impact on rural and regional Australia. And we never get a sort of clear line of sight on them.
And I think that oftentimes the way the rural view of those issues is portrayed in the national debate, and certainly sometimes in the political debate, is sort of via caricature. There's sort of a stereotypical alleged rural view, but actually the discussion and the debate in rural areas is often far more informed and sophisticated than that. And I think Gabby wrote a book, Rusted Off, which went to a lot of these issues. And I found it really revealing about, you know, how deeply these issues are discussed and considered in rural areas. And I guess that's a bit of what we want to reflect.
Obviously, Australia is a huge country. Gabby, how are you going to harness all this local knowledge into kind of a cohesive narrative for reporting on The Guardian?
Well, I think the thing that I tried to do with Rusted Off was pick the themes that would resonate in other places. So rather than picking a specific, very localised story, there are many local stories that reflect into regional, state and national, international issues as well. And so I think it's picking your way through the narrative to find those stories that resonate and that other communities will understand. And I think that's what story sharing is about. Ultimately, it's understanding the issues that you've got in your local places, but then looking across the landscape right across Australia and sometimes internationally with our coverage and seeing, you know, oh, wow, that's a really interesting idea. They did it like that. Maybe we could try something like that. Because all of these places have these amazing progress associations and all these little community groups that are really interested in the way other people are doing things.
I'm also hoping for some old-fashioned accountability journalism as well. I mean, the local councils, when the local newspapers disappear, the local councils go unreported and unscrutinised. And, you know, no, we can't be at every local council meeting, but I'm hoping that our network of readers and reporters and freelancers will tip us off when there's something going on in somewhere, and we can actually, you know, do some straight out accountability reporting as well.
Definitely. And rural policy issues, you know, that are happening at state and federal level, I think is really important too, to scrutinise those, you know, with the knowledge of rural and regional places.
Do we have any stories that we really are busting to tell at the beginning of the project?
We've already done aged care today, and I will keep following that because that is a big issue. More than half of aged care facilities are losing money in rural and regional areas, and that is really facing a cliff, because that's even after viability payments from the federal government through the pandemic. So health issues obviously going to be a big one with the pandemic, and how these places deal with the challenges that COVID is throwing up. And then there's the economic story, which I think is a really big one. Often the economies of rural and regional areas aren't scrutinised and aren't reported in a way that really describes the change that's happening. And that has been a big one for me, particularly in the latest book that I've talked about, just that massive demand amongst corporate agriculture for the food production business and how that might change regional communities. I think that's really big.
And also climate, I mean, is always or usually presented in the political debate as some sort of threat to rural communities, climate policy is. But, Gabrielle and I have had discussions about the extent to which rural communities are actually looking at it as an economic, potential economic benefit, as a prospective source of income. I think that's really interesting thing to follow as well.
Climate policy is a massive issue for the regions. And I think we're only now after, what is it, Lenore, 10 years of dumb.
A lifetime of stupid.
Like, I'm really noticing this massive shift in, with little light bulbs coming on all over the place about, wow, this could actually be an opportunity in terms of transition. And I know transition is a dirty word, but there could be opportunities that we could grab with this. And it sort of crashes into the trends around global markets, that idea that, you know, some people are starting to be paid for improving their landscape or improving their soil carbon. David Littleproud, the agriculture minister, is doing a carbon plus biodiversity program. So, you know, I think digging into the details of all of that with our resources is going to be really useful for people and for businesses as they're making decisions right across country Australia.
And Gabby, both your books have kind of gone to this, and Lenore, you mentioned stereotypes before, but there's often this idea that country people are like this and city people are like this and, you know, their views don't meet anywhere. Is that a true representation, and how will we address this through the rural network?
Well, I think just nuanced reporting, right? So with all the colours of the rainbow in terms of, you know, the complexity of small towns and large regional centres as well. So, you know, what I tried to do was describe the characters that you might want to, that you might see as stereotypical, and describe the complexity in those people. And I think that only happens with, you know, really sort of nuanced reporting.
And I'm hoping it will be a kind of a bridge, you know, like that urban readers who want to understand these issues will get really rich, properly informed reporting, and rural and regional readers will have somewhere where their stories are getting told. And because we're trying to sort of build these communities through a Facebook group and a newsletter, I'm hoping that there'll be like a community of rural and regional readers who will form around this project as well.
Yeah, the thing that really has sort of struck me, I guess, about rural and regional reporting since I've been diving into it more deeply is that real complexity about characters, and that you make assumptions about people. And we all do this, like put people in a box and, oh, they must be this if they do these things or they vote that way. One of the conversations I've had recently was with a really quite a big family farmer, and he was talking about the change of technology and how it was really, I guess, amplifying the capacity of businesses in some ways to increase their scale. And when I asked about, you know, what would happen to the workers who were previously working on the farm that could be replaced by some technology, he said, I think, you know, we're going to have a universal basic wage. We're going to have to accept that a fair portion of people may actually be on welfare. And it's those sorts of stories that just blew me away, because I thought, here's a conservative guy talking about this key economic issue in agriculture in rural Australia the last thing I expected him to mention was universal basic income. It's sort of, I think everyone's disrupting or changing the way they approach things now because they're faced with all these challenges. And I think we can't underestimate the way people think or the complexity of what they do.
And when you make those assumptions and put people into boxes without actually listening or talking to them, that is what leads to polarization. That is what leads to that sort of breakdown in understanding and ultimately complete breakdown in trust. So hopefully taking this approach will have the opposite effect.
I think it suits some people to have that cartoon narrative, you know, that thing we hear all the time, for example, from the National Party, the inner city latte sippers, you know, it means you don't have to get past the cartoonish stuff and do the hard work of what's required.
To many Australians who don't live in regions, the National Party is the representation of what, you know, country people are. It's Barnaby Joyce, isn't it?
Although the National Party, interestingly, recently said actually they don't necessarily represent the farmers, they represent blue-collar workers in regional areas, which is certainly a redefinition of their central purpose.
It is a complete redefinition. And I would note the membership, I think, is lower than Farmers for Climate Action. I'd be pleased if anyone could contradict that, given it's hard to see numbers. But from my sources, I think there's a real change happening in amongst farmers.
Do they feel they want better representation in politics, Gabby?
Oh, I think everyone feels they want better representation. I think if you asked anyone on the street, they would want better representation. How that happens, I think, is a live conversation in rural and regional areas.
But, I mean, some of them have gotten those together and done those sort of voices of campaigns, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, but clearly it's something people are thinking about, right?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, the next election will be really interesting. You know, there's voices, movements in Queensland, Angus Taylor's electorate down in Victoria. So how they land, I think, will depend on each community, but definitely an interesting story to watch coming up to the election.
So what does this network look like actually on the ground day to day?
It's funded from a philanthropic grant from the Vincent Fairfax Family Foundation, and it's in collaboration with UTS Centre for Media Transition. So it's a big collaboration, and we hope it makes a difference to our ability to report on rural and regional issues. The reporter that we have employed through the collaboration with UTS Centre for Media Transition, Natasha May, she's going to be based at the Gilgandra Weekly, which is a little independent newspaper. She'll work one day a week for that paper and the rest of the time with Gabby. And I think that's really interesting because it's embedding her in a regional community. It's giving back a little bit to regional news gathering. And, well, we're hoping that it gives young reporters a taste of what it's like to be a regional journalist, a rural journalist, and maybe they'll want to continue with that later in their career.
So if you could sum up what your hopes are for this network, I'll ask you both to tell me what you think this will look like in a year or 10 years' time. Lenore, I'll start with you.
I hope we publish a steady stream of fabulous, smart stories, news breaks, revelations, and interesting human interest stories. I hope that it forms a community of rural and regional readers who come to The Guardian for their news and find other sort of like-minded, interested people there. And I hope it means that all of our readers are better informed.
Gabby?
All of the above, but I would add to that as a place to engage and build a sort of conversation amongst rural and regional people and with a bridge to metropolitan people as well. I think that's been missing in what I've seen, you know, in the last 30 years of media, that sort of bridge and that greater understanding between the two groups. And I'll give a shout out to our Facebook page now because, you know, 24 hours in, we're 1,000 people interested in this type of conversation, talking about where they live, talking about their stories, and that has just blown me away. I'm so heartened by that.
Next, animal odd couples and RuPaul's ant race. Now we come to what we can't get out of our head. Lenore, what was it for you this week?
I really liked the story about the CSIRO entomologist who came up with a really good name for a fly. He saw the fly had very sort of gaudy colours, and so he decided to name the fly after RuPaul, and that meant that RuPaul was the first drag queen to be enshrined as the name of a soldier fly. The fly is called Opaluma RuPaul, and the CSIRO entomologist said it was an obvious decision. I was watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race while examining the species, and I know it would challenge RuPaul on the runway serving fierce looks. It has a costume of shiny metallic rainbow colours, and it has legs for days.
I love it. Go fly RuPaul. Gabby, what could you not get out of your head?
Oh, I couldn't get Molly the magpie and Peggy the dog out of my head. This is a kind of partnership, you know, greater than Tom and Jerry. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but a staffy called Peggy has befriended a baby magpie, and they kind of roll around together and play chasing balls on the lawn, and they are constant companions. And it's just sort of, when you're on a farm, you pick up a lot of sort of injured animals sometimes, or we used to have a tawny frog mouth for a while that we were looking after, and it was just glorious, this tawny frog mouth. It'd sit there on its perch, you know, with this, I can't describe the look on its face. It was pretending to be a log, and it just reminded me of that. And I just thought it was a beautiful story that brought joy.
I loved the picture of both the dog and the magpie lying on their backs with their paws and legs in the air. It was hilarious.
It was fantastic. Yeah, just what we needed this week, huh? Thank you so much for joining us, Lenore.
Thanks, Gabs.
And thanks, Gabby.
Thank you, Gabs.
This episode was produced by Miles Herbert and Camilla Hannon. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me, Gabrielle Jackson. Tomorrow in the Full Story feed, you'll find a bonus episode of our brand new podcast, Guardian Australia Reads. I hope you enjoy listening to it, and if you like it, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Laura Murphy-Oates will be back with you on Monday. I hope you have a lovely weekend, and we'll see you all then.